Hello again, this is Carrie Weber, Associate Editor for America. This week, we're talking to Naomi Schaefer Riley, who is a former Wall Street Journal editor and a writer whose work focuses on higher education, religion, philanthropy, and culture. She is the author, most recently, of Till Faith Do Us Part, How Interfaith Marriage is Transforming America. Naomi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about what inspired you to write this book and to commission this survey about interfaith marriage.
Well, I've been writing about religion in America for about 15 years now, and I come from a Jewish background myself. I was raised conservative Jewish. And the conversation about interfaith marriage has obviously been happening in that community for a long time now. But I found when I was reporting on other religious communities, Catholics, evangelicals, Muslims, interfaith marriage was clearly affecting the communities, but they were not having that conversation and certainly not at the same level or to the same extent that the Jewish community was. You know, I was curious about sort of comparing these different religious groups, and that's what led me to do the survey, because I really thought, you know, this is a conversation that could be informed by some hard data.
So what are some of the most interesting findings?
Well, I did this survey of 2,500 people. It was a nationally representative survey, but it also included an oversample of people in interfaith couples, about 400 members of interfaith couples. So we were able to compare them on some interesting measures. So overall, I found an interfaith marriage rate of about 42% in this country. Jews are about the most likely to marry out. Mormons are about the least likely, and Muslims, Catholics, and Protestants fall somewhere in the middle. I actually was very curious about the notion that a lot of religious leaders have that people who marry out must not have been very religious to begin with. They must not have been very attached to their church growing up, for instance. And I found that to not be the case. I asked people, you know, how often they went to church, how religious their family was, whether they had religious education. And even if people said that their family was very religious growing up, that they were attending church every single week growing up, or that they attended a strong religious education, they were no more or less likely to marry out than people who answered those questions differently, which I think is very striking and should kind of make religious leaders think. The one thing that I found correlated with interfaith marriage very highly was the age at which people marry. So the older you are when you marry, the more likely you are to marry out, which I think tells us something about why people are marrying out. I think the 20s and the early 30s, this sort of period of life that David Brooks has called the Odyssey years, are this time when a lot of people are away from religious institutions. They're dating different people, they're going to different schools, they're moving around. And I think often they think of themselves as kind of secular. And so what's happening is we are meeting our mates really after sometimes a decade or more of living this more secular life than we were used to growing up. And to be honest, a lot of people end up returning to faith later, but they have, sort of represented themselves to their spouse as not very religious. So this causes some problems often for many interfaith couples. One of the other, I think, important findings of the survey is that interfaith couples had a lower rate of what they call marital satisfaction than same faith couples. So they were slightly more unhappy.
Is there a description of what kind of unhappiness? Were there certain things they argued about more, or was it just a general dissatisfaction?
Right. So this was interesting. When I asked people, I said, did you argue about religion? And the answers for same faith and interfaith couples were almost the same. About half of each group said they argued about religion. So what I think that tells us is that what people are arguing about is not theology, which is not surprising. I mean, I don't think, you know, Jewish Christian couples are arguing about whether Jesus is the Son of God. I don't think Catholic Protestant couples are arguing about transubstantiation. I think really the things they're arguing about are how to spend your time, how to spend your money, and how to raise your kids. And marriage counselors tell us that those are the three things that obviously cause the most tension in marriages. They're daily, you know, discussions, not always arguments, but, you know, should we send our kids to Catholic schools? Should they go to a Jewish summer camp? Should we be giving money to the mosque? You know, all of these things, I think, you know, raise kind of day-to-day disagreements. And, you know, one of the things that came up with a lot of interfaith couples that I interviewed, and I, by the way, traveled to about 7 different cities and interviewed couples in those places. And they said, and I really sympathized with this sort of sentiment, they said, when we had the discussion about how to raise kids, I felt like I won. You know, okay, great, they're Jewish, that's the end. And then over time, they realized that this had to be an ongoing conversation, not necessarily that they had changed their mind about how to raise their children, but they had to sort of figure out a way to do this that would make both members of the couple comfortable. And there are sometimes factors outside of our control that can make us uncomfortable. I mean, for instance, you may have a pastor, you know, in a church who is very welcoming to interfaith couples, and the church may just decide to change pastors, or the pastor may die. And so suddenly you have a pastor who is not welcoming to interfaith couples, and that kind of throws your family into, you know, having another yet another discussion about, you know, how you're going to operate.
Right. Right. There's so many different things about our faith that inform daily decisions that I think maybe people don't even realize at first.
Exactly. I mean, you know, especially obviously this comes up with the celebration of the holidays. And I think, you know, again, you know, there are obviously all sorts of small rituals, large rituals, but even how you interact with your extended family is part of that. So, you know, you may have a tradition of going every year to an aunt's house for Easter. And really the aunt is just into the Easter egg roll kind of thing. And she's not a very religious person. You know, suddenly the aunt moves away and then you're left with another relative who does take religion much more seriously. And, you know, maybe your Mormon husband is not as comfortable, you know, with the discussions that are taking place. So I think, yeah, like I said, this is an ongoing conversation and people, you know, have to navigate it very carefully.
So broadly speaking, how is interfaith marriage sort of transforming the country, if it is?
Well, interfaith marriage is both helping to assimilate a lot of religious groups, and it's fostering a greater level of tolerance in America. The fact that we have a 42% interfaith marriage rate means that a lot of Americans like Americans of other religious groups. And interestingly, what happens is when we get to know people of other religious groups, we actually like them better. So what's happening, you see, through extended families, especially, you know, suddenly you have, you know, a cousin who's Catholic, a cousin who's Mormon, you know, an uncle who's Muslim. You get to know a member of that faith, and that improves your overall understanding of that faith and your opinion of it too. So I think in some ways, you know, this is a great trend, and it speaks to, like I said, you know, our high levels of tolerance here, and it's accelerating those levels.
And how does a person's perception of how welcoming their own religious community is affect whether or not they are willing to enter into an interfaith relationship?
So I asked in my survey, how welcoming do you think your community is toward interfaith couples? And about across the board, 70% of Americans said their communities were very welcoming of interfaith couples. Now, the one exception to this was Catholics. Only about 50% of them said that their communities were welcoming, very welcoming to interfaith couples. And I thought that was a very striking difference. I mean, in general, Catholics have a relatively high rate of interfaith marriage. The church, you know, since Vatican II particularly, you know, has not really been much of a barrier to interfaith marriage. But there's obviously something going on, I think, at the individual parish level. And I interviewed some Catholic leaders who talked about perhaps it's sort of the way communion is done, you know, with the people who aren't practicing, you know, sitting in the pews while the people who are, you know, go up. People said everything from, well, maybe we don't have enough coffee hours after, you know, after Mass or something like that. But it is striking that in a faith that does seem very open to this in principle, in practice, a lot of people, you know, did not think their congregations were welcoming to interfaith couples.
Yeah, that is interesting. I have a friend who is Catholic and who married a man who's Muslim. And in order to do so, she had to apply for an application for a dispensation from disparity of cult. Just the terms used, she was just like, he's not in a cult. What does this mean? You know, the language she thought was very off-putting, even though she is a faithful Catholic and she went through these actions that she had to go through. But perhaps there's something to that to maybe reconsider.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because a lot of, you know, faiths would just say, no, you can't do it. Right. So there are these sort of roots to Catholic intermarriage, but those roots can sometimes be off-putting. And, you know, if you're Jewish in many, you know, most synagogues, the answer is no, you can't marry out at all. We won't, you know, bless you at all. So it's in a sense that, you know, the Catholic Church is in, like I said, in principle more welcoming right. to interfaith marriage. But some of the hoops that you jump through, you know, you'll excuse my calling them that, you know, I think can be off-putting to interfaith couples.
Sure, sure. Right. Now, our society very much values tolerance. Do you think that people are sort of avoiding discussions of religion or faith in relationships, sort of in the name of tolerance, in a sense? Like, I respect you, and therefore that's enough.
Right. This is one of the most surprising aspects of the survey, in my opinion. More than half of the interfaith couples that I interviewed said they did not discuss how they wanted to raise their children before they got married, which is really quite shocking, particularly when you consider how we really want to get to know the member of a spouse before we marry them. I mean, we live with them often outside of marriage. You know, we want to know every last detail about the kind of toothpaste they use and their family. And this, the fact that this conversation doesn't come up is, I think, very shocking. And one of the things that I thought might have some bearing on this conversation is the fact that we're much less likely to enter into a marriage with someone from a different political party than someone from a different religion. And it seems to me that that politics is something we're very open and upfront about, and people know our views on gun control and immigration and abortion and who we voted for in the last election, I think, very soon after we get to know them. But religion, in some sense, has become, and I say this across faiths, has sort of taken on this more personal tinge. And so a lot of people think it's kind of nosy to ask someone about what they consider kind of a personal relationship with God. So I think that that is definitely part of the issue here about not having these conversations. But the other thing is definitely what you talked about, which is tolerance. I mean, we like to think, well, you know, we like diversity now in every aspect of our lives. We want to have diversity in our educational experience. We want to have diversity in the workplace. We want to live in diverse neighborhoods. So why not diversity in our marriages? And I've talked to people who said, you know, well, I wanted to date everyone. If, you know, if I just ruled some people out, that would be bigoted. You know, so I think, you know, there are two responses to that. First of all, obviously, being in a marriage with someone is much different from living next door to them, going to school with them, or working with them. I mean, both require tolerance, but marriage requires, you know, sort of a whole other level of being on the same page with this person. And the other thing is that there's no, you know, with regard to the bigotry argument, I think we've forgotten that religion is something substantive to consider about a person. It's not just, I think, like skin color, which is obviously what it's being compared to here. There are actually, you know, beliefs and traditions and rituals that go along with this that people choose to practice. And that tells you something about the person. It's not just a superficial, I think, marker.
Yeah, it seems like people do think that sometimes politics is sort of something in the forefront, something very active, and religion is sort of a passive thing that we belong to, which would obviously influence how you prioritize those things in a relationship with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Do you think that people in sort of interfaith relationships or relationships where partners have different beliefs, is it easier for couples who are maybe both devout but in two different religions? Or if one person is devout and the other person is more apathetic about it? You know, is there more conflict in one than the other?
I wasn't able to measure that in terms of the survey that I did. You know, I think there's an argument for thinking about it both ways. You know, on the one hand, people who are more devout, I think, can easily be more sympathetic to their spouses, you know, in terms of understanding the way they prioritize religion. On the other hand, obviously, having two sets of kind of institutional commitments and traditions that are competing with each other can be very difficult. And I did, by the way, find that most couples, you know, who are interfaith marriages, when you break it down, about 45% are raising children in one faith. Another, a little less than a third, are raising them in no faith. And then a smaller percentage, closer to 20%, are really trying in both faiths. The other interesting aspect of this is that as the children get older and older, the likelihood that a family is raising them in two faiths actually goes down. And I think that's because, you know, not just there are these competing commitments and it creates tension, but also it's impractical. I mean, I talked to one couple, you know, they're raising their kids. They had raised their kids actually both Jewish and Catholic. And the mother sort of joked with me. She said it was a good thing our kids were not athletic, because between our commitments to synagogue and church every weekend, it's hard to imagine where we would have found the time for other activities as well.
Right. Well, that's interesting, because you would think that certain core beliefs of certain religions would not mesh all that well, even if there is a mutual respect.
Right. And, you know, in the survey I did, about 4 out of 5 Americans said it was more important for a couple to have common values than to have the same religious beliefs in terms of making a happy marriage. And I think that sort of gets back a little bit to the tolerance thing. But when I question couples who use that phrase with me, well, we have common values, you know, they said, well, you know, we think it's important to treat others as you should be treated. We think it's important to do service to your community. They're somewhat vague concepts. And I think, like I said, the tension tensions seem to arise in the sort of practical applications of those. You know, how are you going to go about doing that? And what, you know, what kinds of religious education are you going to give your kids to understand what undergirds those broad concepts?
Right. So did you find that children growing up with interfaith parents are more likely to tend toward one religion or another, or that they're more likely to be confused or to ignore faith eventually?
So children are more than twice as likely to adopt the faith of the mother as the faith of their father, which when you consider American religion, broadly speaking, is not surprising. Women are more likely to go to church. They're more likely to read the Bible. And they're also more likely to be in charge of ferrying children to and from religious school. So I think sociologically speaking, you know, that's not surprising. I didn't do a longitudinal study, so I can't tell you a lot about the children of these marriages in terms of data. I can tell you that children in interfaith marriages are more likely to enter an interfaith marriage themselves eventually. And obviously, I think, you know, they have been exposed to this. You know, perhaps they themselves, you know, profess a couple of different sets of beliefs. But it's also, I think, they have an understanding of religion as not an either-or thing, but, you know, as something that is fluid and as something that doesn't necessarily, shouldn't necessarily stand between two people.
Did you talk to the couples at all about whether or not one person considered converting or, you know, changing their faith to align with their spouse?
The data, again, was interesting on this. Of the same faith couples that I interviewed, so these are people who are now both practicing the same religion, a quarter of them started off in their marriage as different faiths. So that is actually, you know, quite a high conversion rate. Now, it's possible that both members of the couple converted to a new faith, for instance, but mostly it suggests that a spouse can have a great deal of influence over one's faith. And I almost hesitate to tell people that because, you know, in general, when people are asking for marriage advice, you don't tell them to count on their spouse changing. This is kind of a recipe right. for disaster. But I think religion seems to be the exception here.
Now, you yourself are in a marriage where your beliefs differ from your husband's.
Mm-hmm.
Did you talk with him about that before you entered into that to the extent that you're recommending to these couples? Or did you find yourself it's sort of in a similar position as you moved through your relationship?
Yeah. So I grew up a conservative Jew, as I said, and my husband grew up a Jehovah's Witness, although he had left the faith long before I met him and now considers himself an aspiring atheist. Actually, I told him on our first date that I plan to raise my children Jewish. So I definitely realize now kind of what an exception I was in some sense. And I also realize how strange that sounds to couples because it seems so forward. I mean, in addition to the things that people think about tolerance and the things that, you know, people think about how you shouldn't talk about religion, you know, just in terms of the scenario of thinking about that and talking about that early on, it's very unromantic. You know, I spoke to a pastor, you know, and he said, look, the ideal here is, you know, you have two souls meeting from across the room. And, you know, and they just know that, you know, but he says, you know, I talk to 18-year-olds and I say, look, even if you're not planning to get married anytime soon, you should know what your non-negotiables are. And non-negotiables are not a very romantic thing to have.
No, that's true. But it's interesting. I think there is a difference between sort of being intolerant and being honest.
Exactly. And I think it's, you know, it's more so than people trying to purposefully hide what's going on. I think we're often either not honest with ourselves about these things, mm-hmm. but I also suspect, like I said, that, you know, we don't really know or we don't really consider that faith can come back to us in a particularly strong way later in life. And, you know, this is a pattern that has always happened. I mean, as people, you know, for those few years when people are away from home but haven't gotten married yet, you know, it's always been the case that you have a resurgence of religious feeling at the time of marriage and when you have your first children. It's just that the time now that elapses between when you're a child at home and when you're having the first child yourself is so much longer that I think people, you know, forget.
Now, did you imagine yourself to marry a Jewish person someday when you were younger, or did you always think you would be open to people of different beliefs?
I guess I always sort of knew my non-negotiable was about kids. I mean, I think, you know, I had dated non-Jews in the past, so I don't think anyone who, you know, knew me was shocked to find out I was dating someone not Jewish. But I think I always had this sense that, you know, Judaism was very important to me and it was very much the way I wanted to raise my children.
Right. So what advice do you have to couples who might be dating or engaged in our interfaith and want to bring up this topic or discuss this or don't think they should and maybe need to?
Well, I guess I would say the earlier you have this conversation, the better. And that's certainly been the advice that, you know, I've gotten, you know, written down from all the marriage counselors and religious leaders I've talked to. You know, I think a lot of people actually look to the Catholic Church as a model in terms of premarital counseling. You know, a lot of people borrow the pre-cana questionnaire because it is so extensive. And I think it forces people to really imagine scenarios later in life. And that is, you know, important is imagining these, particularly the milestones of baptism or circumcision or bar mitzvahs or confirmations or something like that, and how you imagine those playing out. Because I hear about the couples who tell me about their unhappiness is I think it's often at those moments. I've talked to a woman who was describing how, you know, she was brought up Catholic and her husband was Protestant, and you know, that was, and she was fine with that. And then all of a sudden, you know, friends from growing up started having their first communions, and she was devastated. I mean, she didn't really see it coming, but you know, she was really saddened by the fact that her children were not participating in this ritual.
So what are some of the hallmarks of couples who are able to successfully navigate an interfaith marriage? What do they do right?
You know, I guess I would say they have this, you know, open line of communication. They do realize that this is an ongoing conversation. And, you know, I guess it's hard to say that there's any one formula, because even as I said before, you know, a lot of people change. Almost 1 in 5 same faith couples end up as interfaith couples too. So I think, you know, it's obviously individuals change over time and you can't control for that. But I do think it's just important to realize and to try to know yourself well enough to know what is going to affect you later.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.